do this. So, I'm starting over for the tape recorder. So practicing the Dharma for whatever our motivations as we begin is a kind of service. So even if we're practicing because we want to become free of suffering, what we see as our own suffering, it is a benefit to our families, to our society, to the world, and not in some mystical way. It's in a very clear way. One of the things that we discover as we begin practice is the ways that we are creating suffering for ourselves. And the ways that suffering is being perpetuated in our lives. And this inevitably brings us into an examination of our ethics. So ethics is a really important way that we can either support the happiness and well-being of others around us, or create harm and a sense of, you know, feeling threatened or unsafe in others. So ethics, you know, have to do with just, you know, how do we support a sense of being safe. You know, the first of the precepts, the five precepts that are practiced as a part of our daily lives is, you know, not to kill, and not to cause harm, not to create a sense of being threatened around us. So you know, if we're acting out angrily, if we are supporting aggression in whatever ways we do, we'll see that in our practice. It'll come up in our practice. We'll see how we may be aggressive to ourselves. We'll feel it. You know, if we sit down after having, if we sit down and meditate, you know, after having, you know, yelled at our spouse or our kid, and, you know, in a very kind of uncontrolled way, we'll feel that. It'll still be kind of resonating in the body. And so a development of ethics is an outcome of practice. We'll also see wanting in the mind, and we'll begin to recognize that, you know, maybe all of this wanting and all of this consuming and all of this you know, having more and more stuff has an impact in the world, has an impact on ourselves, has an impact on the people around us. You know, what is our motivation for wanting more stuff? You know, what is our motivation for wanting, you know, all kinds of expensive clothes or fancy car, or, you know, are we wanting to be admired by everybody? So the, you know, as I talk about this, I know I'm kind of connecting with other things, you know, outside of ethics, but it's because the practice itself, it's very holistic. So it's hard to just to shine light on one aspect of practice without talking about other things, but ethics, you know, is really comes to light in our practice. You know, if we're driven in our sexuality, You know, if we're harming ourselves or harming others in the way that we express our sexuality, you know, we'll begin to connect with that as the mind quiets down and we stop distracting ourselves all the time. A lot of the ways that we cope with painful emotions is by distracting ourselves by buying stuff, by eating, by, you know, getting on our little, you know, smartphones or whatever we do, and you know, constantly, you know, being busy on the web or whatever, or games, and so this drivenness of the mind comes to rest, and we see, you know, whatever addictive behavior that we've been kind of pulled into by trying to distract ourselves from what is uncomfortable, what is unpleasant, what is difficult in our lives. You know, and it, you know, these kinds of addictive behaviors, they have an impact on everyone around us. They, you know, the people who love us, first of all ourselves, you know, we're disconnected from our true heart when we're just always distracting ourselves or always looking for pleasant experiences in these kinds of behaviors. And then, you know, it has an impact on the people around us who care for us as well. I think that one of the ways that I see just practice supporting or having a benefit in the world is that, you know, as we practice and we recognize that actually, you know, the next thing that we get or the next experience that we have is not going to make us happy in any enduring way. You know, when we realize that, you know, we may get a hit of pleasure by, you know, buying some thing or, you know, or eating something or going somewhere that's pleasant. And there's nothing wrong with happiness, with that kind of sensual happiness that, you know, or sensual pleasure. It's not that sensual pleasure is evil or bad. You know, that's often a mistaken notion that people develop in spiritual practice. It's just that when we rely on that to feel good, it's a deluding path, because it never will give us that kind of contentment and peace that we're really looking for. So as we, I think as we deepen in our practice, we really come to value simplicity in our lives. So not needing a whole lot of stuff, not needing to, you know, have many, many different kinds of, you know, experiences, more and more and more experiences. Really being able to be content with what we have. You know, we open the day with a practice of gratitude, and so really being able to be content with what's present in our lives. The practice of gratitude helps us to actually see what there is in our lives which is supporting us and which is, you know, nourishing us. And so, you know, this quality of simplicity and contentment, you know, goes so much against the consumer culture that we live in. And I think that people who live with these qualities of contentment and simplicity are a real witness to the truth that we don't find peace by getting more stuff. So I think that's a service in the world to be a kind of a witness, a presence which, you know, belies the overwhelming energy, or it can feel overwhelming, that, you know, you're not good enough, your hair is not good enough, your body's not good enough, your car is not good enough, you are not enough. And in Dharma practice, we learn that's not true. And that, you know, that true happiness is not something that can be bought, as Sylvia Boorstein says, happiness is an inside job. So it's so that, you know, how do we communicate that? You know, I think we communicate so much just by being who we are, being authentic in our lives. Certainly, I'm aware of that with my grandchild. You know, I see how she's just learning and changing and becoming, you know, this person. And I mean, she's learning a lot through, you know, what people teach her, but she's just soaking in what is modeled to her in her family, in her community. I think we're all like that. You know, I think of the deepest things that I've learned in my life have been through just, you know, the presence of people who are wise and compassionate and how they live that out in their lives. So it's part of our practice that as we become less driven and compulsive and addicted and deluded, and more connected to our inner wisdom and kindness and compassion, that this just has a ripple effect. You know, it extends outward. Addressing the root causes of suffering in ourselves is really addressing the root causes of suffering in the world. I remember when I was, you know, 17, 18, 19, I was very involved in what was going on in the States where I was growing up, in New York. There was, you know, the peace movement against the Vietnam War, and there was the civil rights movement, and I, you know, one of the things that really struck me, and actually, you know, I think was really important in directing me to practice, was that the causes were really important, and the causes were, you know, were just, and yet there was so much blame and anger that, you know, I couldn't see how peace could emerge from that, all that anger and blame. There's division, the division and the exclusion, you know, was so present. And of course, boy, we see it today, so many ways. Not to say that our own society is perfect, but the division in the States is really it's so sad, so painful to see. So it's not to say that, you know, just addressing the greed, hatred, and delusion within ourselves is going to solve all the problems of the world. I would say that we need to address those forces within ourselves and engage with the issues of the world and not neglect one for the other. And just to make a final point about how important practicing the Dharma is as a service to the world. The Dharma doesn't just point toward freedom from physical and psychological suffering. It points deeper to freedom from existential suffering. So it really, it's not just, you know, somehow figuring out how to feel better about ourselves, but it's really looking at this drive that we have to create a stable sense of self in the unstable and transient and ever-shifting conditions of life, the conditions of being alive, the sense of our own insubstantiality. So as much as Dharma practice does help us along the way, helps us to feel better, it helps us to get calmer, it helps us, even can even, you know, help us to heal, because some of the ailments of the body are held by stress and habits of mind. Even further than that, it points to the deep source of suffering, and leads us to freedom from that. So altruism is an expression of love, is an expression of our interconnectedness. Really, I think love and knowing our interconnectedness are two sides of the same coin. So as we develop in wisdom and we see that all of the thoughts, all of the emotions, all of the sensations, they're always coming and going, that they are, and that awareness, that mindfulness is the doorway to a true presence in an authentic self, an authentic self, not in any way being an isolated thing, but just a quality of presence in the process of knowing all of the experience which flows through us. So as we discover, yes, I'm not, or no, I'm not fear, I'm not desire, I'm not jealousy. You know, these come and go. These are things that visit me, visit my awareness. but they're not who I am. You know, we realize that, you know, the Buddha in mindfulness gives instruction to look internally and externally. And we look around and we say, yeah, other people are also suffering. They're suffering because there's anger, there's wanting, there's jealousy, there's a feeling of not being good enough. Other people also, other beings are also suffering in various ways. And so that interconnectedness gives rise to compassion. That awareness, that this quality of knowing, this quality of presence. Well, yeah, that's something that other people too experience. And so again, this quality of this insight gives rise to our interconnectedness. And so it's in a very natural way, as we know that we're deeply interconnected, we share so much with other human beings and other life forms, our capacity of our heart for love and compassion grows, and we realize that, you know, the separation that we imagined, you know, is just that, you know, that really there's life. There's just life flowing through all of us. And so that the wish that we can be free from suffering, which we connected with in our own practice and which motivated us and perhaps set us on the path to practice, you know, becomes a wish or an intention or a caring that others also be happy and free from suffering. And so we can be present to another, you know, not with an agenda about, well, what you need to do is, you know, if you want to be happier, if you want to be free from suffering, this is what you need to do. You know, do like I did. You know, practice meditation. We can be present to the person and first of all listen and understand. You know, who is that being and what is their suffering and what is their heart aspiration, and be open to that person, that being, whether it's, you know, somebody in our family or somebody that we've just met, you know, on the street, that we see on the street, somebody who may be homeless or somebody who may be caught up in something in their mind and be agitated. Or somebody who may be, you know, just really caught up in a world of, you know, wanting to be loved because of what they look like, or loved because of, or respected, or thought that they're important because of, you know, how powerful they are. So can we, through connecting with, you know, an openness in our own heart to all of what we are, which is what we do in practice, can we be present to the other? So simple acts of service are really wonderful teachings as well. One of the things that we did in our community here, our Sunday Sangha, was we went and we've done this a couple of times, just gone across the street and cleaned up the park. So, you know, it's here we are, you know, we look out the window and like, this park, you know, is just, it, you know, as we were talking about earlier, the sense of service comes from gratitude. Like, wow, it's so beautiful. You know, this park is just these trees, you know, all the life in the park. It's just there and supporting us to be present and to have an enjoyable sit. So can we serve the park in some way? So we went out and, you know, a bunch of us went out and picked up papers and garbage in the park. And then, of course, you know, the thought comes up, like, you know, what a slob. Why did they throw down their candy wrapper, right? All of this judgment, you know, like anger. And like, that's, then and then, okay, here we are. We're mindfully picking up garbage. So let's be mindful of this. Let's connect with this. This feeling of judgment, this feeling of anger, and recognize that in that moment, just like that, you know, we've shifted from being connected to the whole life and the whole, you know, flow of in the park and gratitude and appreciation to feeling like I'm doing this for someone else who somehow is bad, right? So so that's, and then okay, there's judgment. Like, what is judgment? What is that experience? And where does it come up, and how does it feel, and what, you know, what's the effect of that, you know. I mean, it's not that I'm bad to have a judging thought. The judging thought just came up. I didn't, you know, say I'm going to have a judging thought now. The judging thought just came up. It's selfless. So that act of service becomes a whole context for practice. You know, a simple act of, you know, picking up a piece of garbage that somebody dropped on the ground. How do we do it? You know, do we do it with judgment? Do we do it with self-righteousness? Do we do it with love? Do we do it with compassion? Do we do it just as part of life? Somebody dropped it, somebody picks it up, you know. This selfless service, seva, or altruistic service, can just become a whole context for seeing, you know, the mind, different habits of the mind. And so, you know, it's so service doesn't need to be something that is a big commitment. I mean, it can be, you know, it can, like, service can be, you know, I'm going to go to some place where, you know, there's been a disaster, or I'm going to devote my life to alleviating poverty, or, you know, it can be that. It can be something very simple, like, you know, when you see some garbage in the park, just pick it up and then be present in that. Be present in the experience of that. Another thing about service is that it's a practice of generosity. So we're being generous with our time, with our energy, with our resources. You know, the Buddha taught generosity as the as a foundation practice. You know, he would often, when people would come to ask teachings from him, he would often teach generosity as one of the first practices, and then ethics, and then meditation. So, and generosity again, you know, first of all, it's such a gift. Like, it, in fact, the word dana, which is the word that we use for generosity, you know, is the same word as gift, means gift in Pali. And so just think for a minute of a time when somebody has been generous with you, has just given you something. It doesn't necessarily mean even need to be something of monetary value. You know, it could be an acknowledgement. It could be giving you their time, sitting with you and being present with you when you were feeling down or when you were in difficulty some way. So when somebody just, it is so life-giving, and when we can give that that presence in some way, give ourselves in service, it is so life-giving in the world. And it is so life-giving to ourselves too, because it counters that sense of I'm not enough, or, you know, would they really want, you know, me to call them? Like, you know, I mean, I'm not important to them, right? You know, so why should I call them, you know? Would they really want me? So that self-judgment, that self-negation. So when we think of, you know, somebody who's sick or somebody who's lost a loved one, a person has died in their lives or gone away, you know, and we think reaching out, you know, callings, and then we think, oh, well, they don't, you know, who am I, right? But it does mean a lot. It's a quality of service, and it's a quality of presence that does mean a lot. And and I think that in the expression of compassion, that quality of presence is just it's kind of the basis. Like, I'm not going to turn away. I'm not going to say that, you know, I can't be with you, or it doesn't matter if I'm with you in this difficulty that you're in. I think that quality of compassion of just not turning away, just saying I care about this. I'm with you. I'm holding a space with you. I think that is the essence of compassion. And so finally, the last thing I'll say is that, you know, the wisdom view of service is that when we are serving others, you know, we truly are serving ourselves, because we are interconnected. When we're accepting what is challenging or unpleasant, when we're being present without judgment to others, you know, so-called others, we're accepting with compassion and without judgment what is unawakened in ourselves, what is deluded and unskillful in ourselves. And so the acceptance, it's with acceptance, that's the first step to development and change and evolution. Is first of all not denying, but accepting what is what is there. So, so I'd like to just invite any response or question that you might have about anything that I've said, talked about ethics, talked about generosity, talked about compassion, talked about seeing in ourselves, seeing the kind of the shadow, those unskillful things in ourselves with a heart of acceptance and that enabling us to accept it in the other. Any thoughts or questions or responses that you'd like to give?
You talked about generosity to others. I'm feeling sometimes we need also to be generous to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
No, sometimes we do the opposite, and then we hurt ourselves.
Yeah, so I don't know if everybody heard, but that we need to be generous. We need to be generous to ourselves and to others. And that generosity is expressed in when we meditate, when we practice the Dharma, you know, that openness of heart to ourselves, the quality of acceptance, not judging ourselves, giving space to ourselves to feel what we feel. And also recognizing, you know, which are the attitudes, which are the actions that will bring us more happiness, more freedom, and which are going to perpetuate the suffering. And that's so the Dharma practice is an act of great generosity to ourselves. Absolutely.
I'm interested in like the evolvement of practice, how it's almost like maybe it's this open awareness thing, like you're so aware of your body that if you do something unethical that right away you can see it inside, and somehow I see it in this area generally in my breath, but I can, and it's like even if I want to do something bad or if I attempt to do something bad, it's like the awareness of the body lets me know. It's like an alarm clock or something. So it's really hard to do things where I used to get away with more. But also it goes out into like the world, into politics. You know, I was so moved by the Standing Rock. Everyone was there on Facebook. Like, but it's not like I wanted to become more political, but somehow it's the interconnectedness and,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, I think that what you said about the body is so important. You know, the body really becomes our ally in practice. You know, because the body, when we practice mindfulness of the body, you know, we're becoming present in the body. And the body is not just, you know, usually we think the body is, we equate the body with form, right, with matter, with materiality. The body is also conscious. There's consciousness right through the body, you know. And, you know, when we touch something, when we taste something, you know, there's this awareness in the body. And people who are doing brain research are talking about different, you know, seats of knowing, not just in the brain, but also in the heart, in the gut. So yeah, these the body talks to us, and when the body becomes more sensitive, when we stop, you know, kind of going into excess and addictive behavior with the body, and we're really tuned into the body more and more, it becomes a great ally. And absolutely right, you know. I experienced that, you know, there's a thought of doing something or not doing something, and right away in the body, you know, it's kind of highlighting that I'm not conforming to my highest self in doing or not doing something. And yeah, it's a wonderful witness. And often, you know, just connecting it to what we're talking about with service, I think often just I feel in the body, you know, kind of this impel to extend myself to somebody in some way, you know, like so that it's a kind of intuitive awareness in the body. And so yeah, I think it's very connected, and we're touched. I was thinking of a quote that I heard once that by a Zen nun from ancient times. I don't remember at what time, but just this statement she made that, you know, I live life with my whole body. And that's what, you know, it spoke to me, that to live life with our whole bodies. And it does draw us into connection with the world and with life in ways that, you know, each one of us will respond differently. So one person, you know, might feel called to go to Standing Rock. One person might feel called to do work in prisons, you know, or all kinds of different things, or a number of those different things. But you know, each one of us, our hearts will call us in particular ways according to our own experiences and you know, connection. So we've been talking for a long time. So let's take a little break. And so it's 10 to 3 right now. So we'll come back here, let's say, at 10 after 3.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.